Good evening, and welcome to Campus Voices, WRFL's live news programming discussing important issues relating to the University of Kentucky, Lexington, and the larger Central Kentucky community. I'm your host for today, Evan Oliver. Today we're discussing Press Forward Bluegrass and a new effort connected to Media Lex, Civic Lex, and the Woodford Sun, as well as the increasing importance in keeping local journalism alive. Local news is how people keep up with what is happening around them. City government, school boards, local businesses, neighborhood changes, obituaries, community events, all of those smaller pieces of information add up to how people understand the place they live. When that coverage starts to disappear, people lose a steady source of information about their own community. And once that local presence is gone, it can be difficult to rebuild it from the outside. Joining us today is Peter Baniak, who has an extensive background in local journalism and media leadership in Central Kentucky. Peter has served as editor of the Lexington Herald Leader, worked with Civic Lex as a consultant, and is connected to public affairs journalism education through the Al Cross Fellow and visiting professional at UK. Welcome to Campus Voices, Peter. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us is Kaki Urch, who currently teaches journalism courses at the University of Kentucky School of Journalism and Media. Kaki works closely with students on reporting, public affairs journalism, and community-centered storytelling, and she has helped connect student journalists to local issues through projects such as Campus Voices. Kaki, thank you for being here.
It's absolutely a pleasure.
So we'll go ahead and get into the questions. Kaki, I wanted to start with the basics for the listeners who may not know much about Press Forward Bluegrass yet. Can you explain what Press Forward Bluegrass is and what this project effort with Media Lex, Civic Lex, and the Woodford Sun is trying to do in Central Kentucky?
Sure. It's really exciting, and it's part of a national situation. We've had a situation where we'll talk a little bit about news deserts later, where people have identified news deserts, places that aren't served by local journalism. And nationally, many people became very worried about this, and they got together, and some people who had really significant money, foundations and so forth, founded this thing called Press Forward for the whole nation. And so far, they're based in Miami, which is the former home of what is used to be called the Knight Ridder newspaper chain, which is became which owned the Herald Leader. And in any case, they've given out $400 million to local journalism projects to get people reporting their own journalism in their own areas as a, you know, to a microcosm. And so it has come about that by the grace of the Bluegrass Community Foundation, which adjudicates the Knight Foundation money here in our Knight City. You know, there are a bunch of different Knight cities. One is Detroit, one is Miami, wherever there was a Knight Ridder paper. And they decided with the brilliant leader, Dr. Melissa Newman, who has taught journalism at EKU and is a really wonderful nonprofit leader. We've started one here in the Bluegrass, and it serves 16 counties. And they had a, Peter was here at that event. It was at the Lyric Theater, right? And we had Charles M. Blow, who is a former longtime New York Times columnist and an author who's and he went back to his hometown in Louisiana and made this documentary for Press Forward about what it means about the small town newspaper there. And so he came and he was interviewed by Dr. Newman, and the place was packed. What did you think, Peter? Did you like it?
It was a wonderful evening. It was great to see that many people come out in support of local news and show that level of interest in the ongoing viability and health of local news. You know, there was some exciting news made that night about the project. I think some of the project we're going to talk about. But I think to me, the biggest takeaway I had that night, in addition to being able to hear from Charles M. Blow, was just the amount of the number of people who were there just to show their interest and support of strong local news.
It was 400 to 500 people, you know, on an evening. And the news that was given to us was, hey, there is a Press Forward Bluegrass. This is Melissa Newman. She's running it. And she has created a deal where there are going to be three pilot programs at community news organizations around the Bluegrass to start. And so they announced those. One is with Media Lex, which is formerly Radio Lex, right? So that's a community news, community radio station and media space down in the Gray Line Station. Two stations, one in Spanish language, one in English, mostly geared toward maybe the African-American community, the downtown community, LGBTQIA. And then another one called Civic Lex, which you have been involved with, Peter.
Yeah, Civic Lex is a great organization that is primarily focused on city government here in Lexington. They have a newsroom, but they're a lot more than that. It is the thing that is most intriguing about Civic Lex is that it is both a newsroom and a civic engagement organization that is really about civic education and you know, has a program in the Fayette County Public Schools that is really focused on mm-hmm. that and really about connecting citizens more directly to their city government.
Right. And Melissa Tibbs, who is with that civic thing, is on our Media Lex. And then the other community organization, it's Media Lex, Civic Lex, and then the other community organization is the beloved, small, hometown Woodford Sun, owned by the Chandler family, with a Chandler in the new editorial, a female Chandler in the new editorial chair. And there is going to be support. There are going to be Report for America people. There are going to be trainings. I'm going to be doing some of that this summer.
Nice.
So yeah. that's what it is. And there's new for later, there's really new good breaking news out of Press Forward Bluegrass is today they have announced that they are going to give out $10,000 grants, $10,000 grants to local news entities. And we'll tell you more about that later.
Yeah, absolutely. We absolutely will. And we'll talk about a bit more on that Charles M. Blow seminar that he did. That was absolutely, absolutely great. So furthermore, one thing that stood out to me when I was learning about this effort is that the main idea revolves around training people who are already trusted and already connected to their communities. Why do you believe that that's so important, especially in today's media landscape?
Peter, do you want to tackle
sure,
that?
Sure, I can take that one. So I think the thing that is intriguing about that is that pilot program, as Khaki mentioned, is in conjunction between Press Forward Bluegrass and Report for America. And Report for America is an organization that has existed nationally. It's a nonprofit that is dedicated toward placing journalists in communities around the country that need news organizations that are looking for additional areas of coverage that they feel like are underserved. Most of those journalists are very early career journalists, and so they are new in many cases there. And what is intriguing about this pilot project here is that it is working with a similar model as what Report for America has done, which is support for the journalists, training for the journalists. It's not just placing them in the newsroom, but it's mm-hmm. a lot more than that as they work. But these are folks who already know the community. They are from the community. They are, as you said, they're trusted voices in the community, and that's what's really intriguing about this model. So they're getting that journalism training, but they're folks who are already there, and so mm-hmm. they already know the place. They already know the stories. They already know the essence of the community that they're reporting about. Absolutely. Which I think is what makes this really, really intriguing.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to move over to you, Khaki, from your journalism and education experience. What stood out to you about this model when you first started thinking about it regarding students?
Well, you know, I think this model is the model that this, for the Media Lex project, was a low-power FM radio station duo. I was one of the founders of that. And that was the reason why Low Power FM was authorized by the FCC, was to give people in the places an access to, you know, the broadcast spectrum, which is the American people's property, right? And so we, down at Radio Lex, they have already had so many insider people in the community on air trained to be radio folks. And then they're just taking this leap to really, like, kind of platformize, like the BBC has done, like NPR has done so successfully, you know, a well-rounded full newsroom that's online, both with video and with reported text that me and Dr. Newman, who has a great curriculum created for this, are going to train people in this summer. That's my summer project, is to create this community newsroom over there at the Media Lex project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, more on to why this sort of topic matters. A lot of people hear the phrase local journalism, and they may think first about newspapers, local TV, or maybe their city council meetings. But local journalism is also much more personal than that, as we've mentioned. It's the way that people find out about what is happening in their schools, their neighborhoods, and in their everyday life of their community. Peter, from your perspective, what do communities lose when local newsrooms shrink or disappear?
So I think that's a really powerful and important question. I feel compelled, though, to point out there is a lot of really great journalism still being done in Kentucky, in Lexington.
Shout out to all y'all.
Yeah, and a lot of great journalists who are working really hard every day to cover their communities, to cover the state, to cover important issues and things that are of great interest to the public. But nationally, you have seen, for lots of reasons. So economic challenges, of course, have been ongoing for decades, frankly, around. The move to digital, things like COVID but the biggest thing you lose, to answer your question more directly, that I think that you lose is a sense of connection. You lose when you have less news and information being produced by local journalists, you really lose a sense of connection, a sense of connectedness to your government, a sense of connectedness to what's going on, a sense of connectedness to your neighbor. Mm-hmm. Because there's when you are lacking that information in terms of the, and you see this in many of our political conversations, you know, where we're often talking at each other instead of talking with each other, talking to each other. And so I think that's the biggest thing that you lose. And mm-hmm. People feel like they don't really know. They lose a sense of ownership of their government because they don't really know what's happening until a crisis comes. And so I think sort of that consistency of coverage in which everyone in the community is connecting around what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And, you know, that includes things like, sporting events, prep sports, school things, mm-hmm. school board, as we've seen a lot. So well reported by the Herald Leader, mm-hmm. Really looking at our Fayette County School Board. And so a community-based journalist maybe has more time to go out and do maybe some school-based reporting on a particular thing, or maybe we have many people who want to be part of the sports, sports media. And every one of the people who are successful in that will tell you start at preps. Start in your high school, start, with your basics, and we'll have opportunities for people to do that.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. It's not just about government, right? It's also about what's happening in your neighborhood. It's about arts.
Mm-hmm.
And you think arts, it's about the culture mm-hmm. of your community. It's sports, as you mentioned. It's about the environment. It's about land use. It's about business and local business. I mean, all of those elements. So it's not just about government. Government's the one that sort of comes to mind first. But it's like all of these things that kind of knit us together as a community. Local journalists mm-hmm. cover those things. And mm-hmm. when that coverage disappears, it's sort of harder for the whole community to have good, actionable information about what's really going on.
And then the governmental part, which Civic Lex has done such a great job of. They've been established for what now, 8 years, 10 years maybe?
Yeah.
About that. They have these things on their online where they really bring the budget into focus. This notion that a public budget is sort of a values sheet. Mm-hmm. What are we funding shows what are we valuing. And they've been really able to share that with a wide swath mm-hmm. of the community through the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to a topic you brought up earlier, Khaki, I wanted to bring up the phrase news desert as it gets used a lot in conversations about journalism in this context. What does a news desert look like in real life?
Well, the absolute expert on this is our Professor Emeritus Al Cross, who ran the Institute for Rural Journalism and Community Rural Journalism and Community Issues, which is now run by Benji Hamm, one of our other colleagues in journalism. And so Al introduced this concept to me, and he's very close to the people who really started it off. Down in North Carolina, there were studies done at UNC that really pioneered looking at what Peter has described, right? Where have people had these losses? And kind of riffing off the notion of a food desert where you can't get your fresh stuff. You know, you'll go to a bodega and they have like five heads of lettuce because then they can take food stamps. Some great studies were done. And then the person who did the studies at North Carolina has moved to your alma mater, Northwestern,
right.
Which, and so people are really becoming aware of that. And this news desert concept was, and the understanding of it was part of what got all of these foundations, like the MacArthur Foundation, let's see who else, the Knight Foundation, someone else, a whole bunch of these foundations, and then ones that are named after people whose names you don't know but come up after the, you know, the PBS programming. All of these people concerned with public and civic engagement gave this money to this press forward organization that has been pushing this across the country. And we've seen this in the Pulitzer Prizes too, which were just announced yesterday. We would shout out to one of the founders of WRFL, John Voskel, who was named a Pulitzer finalist for his work at Bloomberg on cryptocurrency.
Awesome. Yeah.
But in the Pulitzer Prizes yesterday, there were a number of entities that won Pulitzer Prizes that were really just startups in news deserts. One example is the group in Connecticut. Did you see that one, Peter?
I did. And there was a finalist, too. Wasn't the Baltimore Banner a finalist?
Yes, and that is two or 3 years ago.
Yeah, which has grown enormously.
And so these are people who have taken this desire to be the connector of communities to actual news as opposed to connectors of, you know, what private equity wants to do with the remaining real estate of these large conglomerate newsrooms. I can say that. And in Connecticut, these people noticed that their cars were being towed like faster than they were supposed to be. There was predatory towing. And then what would happen when you have a car tow like this, and this may resonate with some people, is the amount to get your car back is so much that chaos happens in your life. You know, you can't get to work, you may lose your job, all of these things. Well, this newsroom in Connecticut, can't remember their name, but they went and they did an in-depth report on this. They reported on it. People who were experienced and were already outraged. They were outraged to see that it was a pattern. And then laws were changed. And then that won the Pulitzer Prize. So we're not trying to change any laws at MediaLex right now, you know, but we're definitely trying to do our part to keep, you know, the civic in civic engagement.
Right. Absolutely. So circling back to that Charles Blow seminar that we were mentioning earlier, one thing Charles mentioned that stuck with me was the idea that when local news disappears, it's not easily recreated from the outside. Outside reporters may come in with when something shocking or dangerous happens, but they usually are not there for the smaller everyday stories that shape how a community understands itself. Peter, from your experience in local journalism, how true does that feel to you? What gets lost when people are covering a community are not actually rooted in said community?
So I think that's absolutely true. And just a couple of things to follow up really quickly on what Khaki was saying. First off, Al Cross, who she was mentioning, I got to give a shout out to Al, whose name is now on the fellowship
Peter is in Pence Hall with us in journalism. Exactly. He's teaching. He's just finished his first semester teaching, and he's doing, what are you doing next fall so people can sign up?
I will be teaching a news editing class. I'll be teaching a public service journalism class. I'll be teaching a news literacy in the age of AI class. And I'm co-teaching a great class with David Stevenson that is the narrative storytelling, multimedia narrative storytelling.
The capstone class, which you've just finished doing.
Yeah, which has been just a fantastic experience so far.
There's a connection, actually, between that class and what we're talking about here, because you had a student do a profile of a Chandler.
Sort of back to the original question that you were asking, too, I think what what you get by having folks who are in the community doing reporting that is superior to folks. When folks are, when reporters come in from outside, they don't know sort of the rhythm of the place,
parachute.
Right? Yeah, parachute journalism is what we call it. And so they don't know the rhythm of the place. They don't know, and they're not going to sustain the coverage. So often they're in a moment of crisis. They may stick around for a week or two if it's a really big crisis. But local journalists are going to cover everything that led up to it, and they're going to be there when the crisis is the crisis part of the crisis is over to, you know, do stories about on the ground reporting and to do stories about, you know, how it's being fixed or how it's being addressed. Right. And don't get me wrong, there is great value when national news organizations come in and focus attention on issues in a community, but sort of sustained work. And you see this for things like, you know, some of the, and you saw this in the Pulitzers yesterday, in work in communities like Chicago and Minneapolis around issues related to ICE and immigration enforcement. A lot of the most powerful work was being done by local journalists.
Who were
there on the ground.
Absolutely.
On the streets, you know, day to day.
Yeah, absolutely. And that topic is a great lead into my next question about stories being told from the outside. Sometimes when outsiders cover a place, the stories are driven by curiosity or conflict or by what seems most shocking to people who don't live there. How does that change the way a community is seen?
So it depends. I mean, there are a lot of organizations that will do parachute journalism. They will send somebody in, that person will do a great job reporting and you know, have done fantastic work. But you see this in communities. I mean, frankly, you see it a lot about places like Kentucky that don't get a lot of national coverage, Eastern Kentucky, that they tend to get national coverage when there's something like you just described, something that is really unusual, something that is out of the ordinary. And sometimes that can be really damaging to a place in terms of how it is perceived around the country. Again, and you know, we talked earlier about Report for America, but when I was leading the Herald Leader, we worked with Report for America to reopen a bureau.
That was brilliant coverage. It was one of our alums.
It was Will Wright.
Yeah, right.
In Eastern Kentucky, in the mountains, so that we could have sort of the same idea of what we're talking about here, right? We thought that having sustained coverage of issues in Eastern Kentucky was going to be a lot more powerful and a lot more meaningful than just covering it from time to time. And so that's really this idea behind kind of place-based journalism where you are embedded in a community.
And Will's findings were very significant about water and water quality.
Correct.
Isn't that right? And some laws were changed, I think.
That's absolutely right.
That have now been changed back. But
He was very focused on the water situation in Martin County and actually ended up joining up with two other journalists in Appalachia, also through a Report for America that were in West Virginia, that reported on the issue of the lack of good, clean drinking water, usable water in a lot of communities. And that was that's the kind of reporting that leads to positive change in those communities. And that can be done. You got to be on the ground to do that kind of reporting.
It's the thing you notice in the neighborhood. Why can't I drink my water? Right. You know, like why do we have to have this bottled water? Or, you know, why are we seeing such an uptick in arrests for this one particular new pill called OxyContin?
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So.
And so moving into, once again, MediaLex and all that sort of the impact that they have on this, I wanted to bring you a bit back in, Khaki, to talk a bit more about the grants and the grant effort in putting in real support behind local news capacity. So if you wanted to go ahead.
Sure. Yeah. I am on the board, to be fair with people. I am on the board of MediaLex, which is one of the pilot programs that is being launched with fiscal assistance from Bluegrass Community Foundation's local Press Forward Bluegrass. But they've just announced a new set of grants that don't have anything to do with these pilots so much. These are for, you know, people who are interested in what Peter and I have been talking about. They're called Sustainable Newsroom Innovation Grants. Okay. And I'll just read the overview. Press Forward Bluegrass An initiative of Bluegrass Community Foundation is pleased to announce a competitive grant opportunity to support local newsrooms across 16 counties in the Bluegrass region and is open to nonprofit or fiscally sponsored news providers and for-profit newsrooms engaged in qualifying charitable work. And so the funding is rooted in a simple but urgent belief. Local news is essential civic infrastructure, and its sustainability requires investment in both innovation and long-term capacity, which Peter and I are here together, united on.
Absolutely.
That. And so there's a request for proposals online. They're going to invest $100,000 total in this newsroom-driven ideas, and it's $100,000, but the maximum award for each project is $10,000. They're going to be 10 to 12 grants. The grant period, meaning when do you get the money, if you get the grant, is August 1, 2026 to July 31st, 2027. So you can get newsroom coaching from some of these press forward things. It might be me. I don't know. That's okay. There's eligibility things, but what we're looking for, quote, and this is not but this is Press Forward Bluegrass, which is the arm of the very important national organization, right? And sponsored by our very, I don't want to say believable, but very trustworthy Bluegrass Community Foundation, which does what is the Good Giving Guide. They do all sorts of things.
It's an incredible organization.
Really, really. Mm-hmm. They work for good, get it? Anyway, so, but what they're looking for is Press Forward Bluegrass. They're seeking proposals that are grounded in real newsroom needs, demonstrate clear thinking about sustainability beyond the grant, are feasible, doable, right, within a 12-month time frame, strengthen the local information ecosystem, and reflect on understanding of the community served. So, examples might include new revenue models, audience engagement initiatives, reporter or intern pipelines tied to retention, product or platform eligibility things. But what we're looking for, quote, and this is not but this is Press Forward Bluegrass, which is the arm of the very important national organization, right? And sponsored by our very, I don't want to say believable, but very trustworthy Bluegrass Community Foundation, which does what is the Good Giving Guide. They do all sorts of things.
It's an incredible organization.
Really, really. Mm-hmm. They work for good, get it? Anyway, so, but what they're looking for is Press Forward Bluegrass. They're seeking proposals that are grounded in real newsroom needs, demonstrate clear thinking about sustainability beyond the grant, are feasible, doable, right, within a 12-month time frame, strengthen the local information ecosystem, and reflect on understanding of the community served. So examples might include new revenue models, audience engagement initiatives, reporter or intern pipelines tied to retention, product or platform development, community-informed reporting models, or operational systems that improve efficiency. So this is available. You can go to the Bluegrass Community Foundation website and look under RFPs, which stands for Request for Proposals. And it says Newsroom Grant. And you could just search. There's a press release that went out today. So if you searched Press Forward Bluegrass Grant, that would probably come right back to you.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for all the information that you all were able to give me on Press Forward Bluegrass today and your, long-term battle to keep local journalism alive. I didn't know if you had any other closing thoughts here.
Peter, what do you have? Peter's the senior. Peter's right. The man.
I would just say that this is, local journalism is critical to the health of a democracy and the health of democratic government. And I would also say that efforts like this You know, there's a lot of gloom and doom nationally around the future of journalism, but I think sometimes that loses sight of the fact that there's a lot of innovation going on. There's a lot of cool experimentation going on. There's a lot of newsrooms that are trying new and different things. And I think this effort from Press Forward, the experiment they're doing, the pilot project they're doing, these newsrooms that we've mentioned today, MediaLex, CivicLex, the Woodford Sun, and others, are part of that in terms of trying to make sure that local journalism stays strong, that it continues to thrive, and that they are approaching it in really new, interesting, and innovative ways. And I would also say if people aren't supporting those kinds of organizations, they really should by subscribing or listening or finding their work.
Mm-hmm. And that Peter and I are both in Pence Hall. I'm teaching a class called audio storytelling, which includes this kind of local news stuff, which we may feed to MediaLex, we may feed it to Peter's newsroom, we may collaborate with Peter's public affairs thing, no matter whatever they need. And, you know, students can look into it for sure. You know, J-O-U, I'm J-O-U 314.
Audio storytelling is J-O-U 497.
Yeah, I know, but we just gave it a new number because now it's on the books for real.
I see.
I gave it the last number of the Scooby Ryan room. So it's 314 because that's 014.
Amazing.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be, the fall is going to be fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
And it's a joy to welcome Peter Baniak to our shop.
Yeah, I'm having a great time.
Yes, okay.
Absolutely. Thank you both. A big thank you to Peter Baniak here for joining us to talk about Press Forward Bluegrass, local journalism, and the future of community news in Central Kentucky. And thank you to Khaki Urch as well for helping shape today's conversation. To all of our listeners, we hope today's program leaves you with a better understanding of why local journalism matters, what is at stake when communities lose it, and why efforts to rebuild local news in Central Kentucky are so important. I'm Evan Oliver, and from all of us here at WRFL Lexington, thank you for listening to Campus Voices.